Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, I'm going to be joined by Satish Padiyar. He's the Divisional Vice President of Data and Analytics for Healthcare Service Corporation, HCSC. Many of you may not be familiar with HCSC, but it's a member of the Blue Cross Blue Shield family and generates over $50 billion a year in revenue. So, huge company. I met Satish probably in the mid-20 teens when he was still with McKesson. And he's one of those executives I've come across that's been able to apply what he knows in a broad range of industries, including his current role at HCSC in healthcare. Prior to HCSC, Satish was the global head of digital strategy and platforms for McKesson. In that role, he focused on a range of areas from AI to analytics to robotic process automation. Previously, he's also worked for companies such as Caterpillar, Ally Financial, and BMC Software. Hence, you see my point about his broad background. He also has a wide range of certifications and licenses, including a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt. He's got a bachelor's in engineering from the Indian Institute of Technology, a master's degree in engineering from Florida Atlantic University, and an MBA from Northwestern University and York University. And with that, let's welcome Satish to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today, Satish.
You're welcome, and appreciate the opportunity.
So the first question I'd like to start out with everybody, based on the different backgrounds that have brought people into the analytics data science space, is how did you initially get into this field from both, you know, a career and a goal perspective back years ago when you when you started?
Yeah, it's a great question, Bill. I actually trained as an engineer, so came out of grad school and doing engineering and applied it to a couple of different industry verticals. So high tech and then consulting as a combination of software and solutions for the automotive industry. And towards the end of that, stumbled on this new area called data management and business intelligence. And it really fascinated me because it sort of brought together a number of different aspects of my background. So process work, you know, statistics, math, data quality, or those kinds of aspects, along with business outcomes. And I think the most challenging thing was to really bring all those things together. And I thought this is really neat. And you know, the bug bit, and I haven't really left since.
Well, you know, you mentioned about your engineering background. You've got a wide range of industries. You've been in software, you've been in financial services, manufacturing, distribution, healthcare. I mean, you've done a little bit of everything. So are there any commonalities you've seen across those widely varied industries in terms of how data and analytics gets applied?
Yeah. So I think, you know, it started out as a functional thing, Bill. You know, obviously data and analytics at its core doesn't necessarily change that much. Part of the reason that some of those career changes have happened is because as industries go through their respective waves of transformation, there's demand to apply some of these newer techniques, right, including data and analytics and AI. And so, you know, where financial services may have been further along a decade or so ago, that you know, there's an opportunity to apply this expertise, this knowledge, these skills in that vertical. And then as some of those other industries that you mentioned came along and tried to do the same thing, the same happened. So there is a commonality of the function of the business, if you will, of doing data and analytics and AI. But there's also, I think, the discipline of learning the domain, learning the business itself, and then being creative about applying these constructs to the respective industry that you're in at a given time.
Yeah, when you talk about the domain knowledge, I remember earlier in my career, when I first worked with a couple different industries, there was a point where I think people viewed it a bit as a weakness because I wasn't super deep in industry A or industry B. But then as I worked with more industries, it morphed, I think, both in the people I was talking to's mind, like the clients, but also my own mind, that it was a strength, because while all the domains are somewhat different, they've got their own terminology, some of their own data. To me, there's a lot of you use the term commonalities across them in terms of how it's utilized. So I guess, have you similarly found that you've been able to go to a new domain, a new industry, and so much of what you knew before applies, even though a layperson would say it probably wouldn't?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in fact, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think professionals, leaders from verticals that are perceived and in reality may be further along get recruited away, right? So really, you know, that's been some aspect of my journey you know, the ability to sort of contextualize for a given industry what has worked well elsewhere. And then obviously there's some element of learning the business you're in and then applying it in a relevant way. But that being stipulated, I think to your point, there is a lot of commonality. There are things, there is value in having applied the ideas, the constructs elsewhere that helps one do this in a mature, in a maturing space. And frankly, it's part of the fun, right? I mean, that's what makes it interesting is to go and sort of apply it in a totally different way. You know, candidly, part of my passion for healthcare and life sciences, you know, almost 7 years now in this domain, if you will, in this ecosystem, has been because it's so impactful to people's lives, right? So I think that, you know, whether it's pharma distribution, you know, where vaccines, which in the context of the pandemic are especially relevant, all the way through to healthcare provision for patients, members, and then how that impacts caregivers and providers. So.
Yeah, I remember the extreme, probably about 20 years ago, I remember going to talking to a retailer.
Yeah.
And this was in the day when everyone thought they were special. And so they said, we only want to hear retail examples, but not only retail examples, but fashion retail examples. And not only fashion retail, but small box, mall-based fashion retail retailers, because they thought it was so unique. Yeah. And fast forward, you know, 10 years after that and continuing into today, it almost be the opposite. We want you to come and talk to us, but we don't want to hear anything about other, you know, other small box mall retailers, let alone other retailers, because we want to hear about other companies. So I think there's been a maturation of that viewpoint.
That's right.
Across industries.
Yeah, absolutely. The reality is that there's more in common than that is different for what I call the table stakes kind of applications, right? I mean, there's sort of this core discipline of this work of doing data and analytics and AI and applying it to any business context that is just there. The maturation then leads to, you know, maybe some unique examples, some unique use cases, some unique applications, but that takes time, effort, and investment, candidly, right? And that takes time. But if an enterprise or a space is in the early early stages of maturation, I find there's more in common, as you've been saying, than there is different. So it really makes sense to bring in external perspectives and, you know, really learn from what others have done already.
So following on that theme, are there one or two things that over the years you've seen have matured and have become commonplace, you know, across those industries when it comes to the, you know, the data collection, facilitation of the analytics and delivery that you think have been fairly common and that have really helped to get all of us where we are today?
Yeah, I mean, Bill, I'd say there's three themes that I can think of that are common and becoming almost table stakes. One is this idea of, you know, the transition from what I call a craftsman or artisanal approach to a more rigorous, structured, engineering-oriented approach, almost an at-scale approach, right? There's a growing recognition, independent of industry vertical, that in the end, you know, regardless of what the value driver may be potentially, the business outcome comes from real-world application. So as I often say, you know, your business value starts to accrue from the first moment that your use case or your app solution actually went into production in an operational or business sense. So until then, it's just, you know, it's cool. You know, it's neat that we get to do all of this stuff. So that's one theme. The second common theme I find is a heavy use of technology and automation to do so, right? Whereas before, it may have been an afterthought where you had, you know, statisticians, data scientists, really, you know, doing this locally. I think much tighter collaboration with technology-oriented groups, you know, technologies, things like that. You know, obviously, doing this at scale, taking advantage of newer developments and things like cloud has really helped, you know, improve access. But it also comes with its own challenges. And then the last part I'd say is this domain in particular, data and analytics and AI, really ends up, in my opinion, being much more about being close to the business applicability, far more so than maybe more traditional areas that have been the recipients of similar attention and investment. So technology comes to mind, IT, things like that. I think, you know, they've had their own life cycle, but at the stage that data and analytics is in my opinion, much more important to be closely tied to business applicability, business outcomes, and then work backwards from there to see what needs to happen for all of the other enabling capabilities that make that happen.
Well, one thing I know with you is that you're probably one of the deepest people I know when it comes to the, you know, the platform side of thing, as opposed to the application side of things. So as you've, you know, seen these platforms over the years evolve and so forth, what have been one or two of the historical mistakes that you saw commonly made? And then what are people doing today that's helping to avoid and move beyond those?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bill. I'd say, you know, I view platforms not just as technology back office. I mean, if you really look at, you know, any measure of economic performance in the global economy, platform companies end up being the most valuable enterprises assets. Well, why is that? It's because in the end, business value accrues at scale when you really structure things around a platform model. So I tend to think about, you know, my focus on platforms and, you know, doing some of the enabling things like governance and, you know, using them to drive business value really is shaped by that thinking, that this is all about how one scales this. My earlier phrase about moving from a craftsman-like model to a at scale model, you know, is another theme that I often keep in the back of my mind. I'd say the most common mistake, I think, is to not think through the fact that eventually, if one wants to drive higher business value, then, you know, one has to think about the life cycle of doing this work in that way, taking into account the fact that we will have to, you know, take things to production, we will have to do real world application and do it at scale to start to amplify impact and value. Sometimes these things don't get, that they come as an afterthought, and that's always a challenge, right? So use an example from, you know, your and my earlier career journey, Bill. You know, the days of someone coding in SAS, for example, or, you know, some scripting-based language to do statistics, and then sort of figuratively throwing it over the wall to a programming team that then translates that to some language that allows for a high-performant implementation, right? That cycle time elongation with all those hops of flow really needs attention and focus, so you can avoid that, right? So thinking more holistically in terms of a life cycle that says, if we're doing the experimentation up front, how do we eliminate friction so that if the output, the knowledge work that happens, flows through as fast as you can to that production at scale, you know, through the life cycle. So if you can set that up appropriately, then that makes all the difference in the world. So that ties to some of the earlier mistakes and learnings from various implementations. And then, you know, what's going well, I'd say, is this extreme focus on, as I call it, starting on the right. So a lot of focus on, you know, whether it's data and analytics, whether it's AI, whether it's RPA, you know, any of these other complementary capabilities that could drive business value, in the end, to drive value, you know, I tend to say these things focus on two things. They're either driving an action, helping inform a decision, or doing both. So if one then starts with, well, what decision am I trying to influence or inform, or what action am I trying to help drive, and then work backwards from there, then it really changes the perspective. It's almost, I call it a right to left or an outside in view. And that tends to really be, I think, an emerging pattern I see across, almost becoming, if not best practice, at least you know, better practice to change how effort and investment is focused.
You raise an interesting point, by the way, about the you know, the integration and the focus on having a single set of technology that can take you from end to end. Because I don't think the younger folks in the industry today would appreciate how painful it used to be to take things into production, where literally you were using entire, it wasn't just like you had a development and a production system. You had entirely different platforms being used to develop and entirely different platforms to deploy. Yeah. And there was a huge gulf between those that had to be bridged for every single implementation from scratch, versus today, point my tool to development, make sure it's good, and repoint it to production, and you're in production for the most part. I'm slightly oversimplified, but it's effectively at that level compared to the immense pain. And I think that's part of what's really helped analytics become what it has been, is that friction removal. It took it from a massive undertaking to deploy a single thing to, you know, just a fraction.
That's right. And, you know, I think the journey is not complete, as I think we both have discussed offline as well, Bill, but I would say much closer to, you know, that ideal of the flow being continuous. It's definitely possible. I think larger enterprises, or enterprises that are sort of looking to transform from, you know, call it the old way, to what's feasible with the most current capabilities, they have that transition, right? They have that challenge of sort of transforming from the way, you know, things used to be, the way you just described them, to what is possible. And that takes time and focus and attention, in addition to sort of doing the day-to-day. And I think that's also part of the challenge that we as professionals have, we as leaders have, is to make sure that we're looking at what's feasible and not losing sight of that goal. It's I think of it much more as an effectiveness play, right? There's always sort of this focus on efficiency and trying to do things, but you know, this could be transformational, right? Taking advantage of the elasticity of the cloud, you know, having, as you described them, one cohesive set of capabilities, tools that allow for that flow to happen with a minimal or no friction, all the way from experimentation to deployment at scale. Thinking with those kinds of goals in mind really, you know, has helped me focus differently than I used to earlier in my career, right? I mean, that's been a huge learning along the way, and I've been blessed with the opportunity to talk to leaders like you and learn. So it's been fun.
Big theme in that last comment was the learning.
Yeah.
And I think you've taken it pretty seriously. If someone goes to your LinkedIn profile, you've got a big range of various you know, certifications and certificates, including a Six Sigma Master Black Belt, among others. So what drove you to get the wide range of certifications that you did? And then, you know, for others who maybe haven't put that same effort in, what have been some of the benefits you've seen from putting that effort in terms of advancing your career?
Yeah. So I think, you know, early in my career, there was this focus, I think, on, you know, the background with engineering, blending that with a more traditional technology oriented set of capabilities. So, you know, whether it was project or delivery management, you know, lean agile transformation, leadership, things like that. Or as you mentioned, the Lean and the Six Sigma kinds of skills and expertise. I really felt that those were complementary. It was sort of almost like a blind spot I learned I had, that a traditional academic background, while great as a foundation, did not completely provide And so part of this investment was to try and go and sort of close those self-identified gaps to help me be more effective, you know, increase my impact, increase my ability to contribute. Some of the other ones that are more technology focused, candidly, I was, you know, I was put into some leadership positions early in my career. And, you know, I learned very quickly, at least for me personally, that the best way for me to understand what my teams and my leaders were telling me was to really go and invest in, you know, learn. And what better way to learn and really internalize this than to actually sign up to go get certified, right? So I really took the certification, not necessarily because I had to, but because I wanted to so that I could lead more effectively, understand more effectively, contribute more effectively. And so that's been part of the journey, you know, a lot, including the focus on lean, right? So I started out doing a lot of work consulting in the automotive industry, and, you know, lean and manufacturing was a big play there. But I learned that very quickly that it was equally applicable in transactional environments. So, you know, a lot of the work in financial services came from that. And then obviously now, you know, lean agile in call it technology delivery or in even in data and analytics with the refresh cycles we're seeing for things like DMM CRISP were all sort of heavily influenced, if nothing else, by those themes, right, that originally started out in manufacturing. So it's really fascinating to me as I've seen the industry evolve over the course of my career itself, and see how some of these cross pollination effects have benefited, right, helped drive value in very unique ways.
So as you think back, obviously you've done a lot, you've learned a lot. What are one or two of the traits that you think has helped you the most that you have as you've navigated your career over the years?
I'd say, you know, you called out one, and it's just sort of part of who I am. So I don't necessarily think I had to do anything unique or special to do this. I've always been curious, had a pretty eclectic range of interests that go beyond business or technology, candidly. And so that came naturally. And I think that's been a benefit, just sort of continuing to sort of nurture that curiosity and, you know, making the time. One thing I've observed is, you know, with the focus on digitization, I find, you know, I'll download digital versions of readings, but when I'm particularly intrigued by content, I'll go grab a print copy, and it's probably just an artifact of the way I grew up, right? So the tactile sense is important to me. And so there's that side of it that's really been a benefit. Career-wise, I think, you know, being open about taking risks and leaps of faith where you're really sometimes going a little bit more by gut, obviously informed by experience and so on, and with the recognition that sometimes taking that risk may not work out, right? And so I think some of the most rewarding, personally rewarding things, professionally rewarding moves I've made have really come from those kinds of sort of leaps of faith, if I may call them that. So one example was, you know, sort of signing up to be part of the leadership team for an all new, you know, at the time, and almost a bold experiment, I would call it, in a focus on digital. And so, you know, being part of this high-performing leadership team, having the opportunity to contribute, where, you know, it was sort of a blend of, I'd say, business ownership, operational ownership, technology implementation and solution ownership, and data and analytics work, right, to sort of create the intelligence behind all of that coming together. I still look back and say those kinds of opportunities that were not readily apparent when I was actually considering the opportunity, but just something that came along. And I'd say keeping an open mind about what's feasible, and, you know, after having had a little bit of experience in the real world, sort of using intuition, relying on input from, you know, friends and mentors in the professional world that could provide context and perspective when you're wrestling with a decision like this, has really helped me, right? I've been incredibly fortunate that that has come in more than my fair share, I'd say. You know, that kind of input, yeah. And it's been a fun journey. I've really enjoyed it.
You know, you mentioned taking those risks. I've often thought, obviously, you know, there's skill involved in a career. There's also some luck. And you know, when you talk about picking the right gambles, let's be really generous and say that we could get risk to where it's 70-30 in our favor, right? When we take those risks. But even if you think of it that way, that means that, you know, 1 out of 10 people are going to miss both of their two big gambles. Right. And what a different place in a career they could be in. You know, the person who almost joined a Microsoft or a Facebook in the early days, but went to another startup that went bankrupt instead, yeah. You know, their career ends up so different. And I think it's not just having those guts, but then when you make a bet that goes wrong, you got to realize it pretty quick and make another adjustment on top, right? I think it's that constant assessment of what is the right gamble today. And staying where you are is a gamble of sorts in and of itself, right?
That's right. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, there was all sort of this contrarian view when, you know, the term quiet quitting was all the rage, right? Where it's like, well, no, double down, right? I mean, that's something I don't subscribe to, right? I mean, if you're not growing, if you're not feeling like you're in a good place, you know, going back to your example there, Bill, you know, there's a good friend and mentor who actually was in that situation, right? I mean, I won't say who, but, you know, had an opportunity, one of the hyperscalers in the early days, you know, would have been a really well-rewarded person of independent means, just based on the trajectory of the path not taken, but has done fine, right? I mean, ended up, you know, really in a very complementary space, doing very similar things. And candidly, beyond a certain point, it's more about the satisfaction that one gets from, you know, the contributions and the impact. And it comes down to personal values, right? So I think I've had those conversations with some friends that have been in that same situation you described. I've always, you know, something a good friend from grad school once said has really stuck with me, that she said, when one door opens, or one door closes, many open, right? And so if you sort of think about it that way, then yeah, maybe something didn't quite work out. But, you know, if you keep an open mind and, you know, you're curious, then I find usually people that are well-intentioned, have high integrity, do the right things, typically land on their feet. They may go through some churn, you know, personally or professionally, but in the end, it works out. You know, I haven't personally seen, and this is obviously anecdotal, but, you know, I don't think there's been sort of devastatingly negative impacts to some folks. You know, if you look at it over the appropriate time history, right? I mean, if you look at it more narrowly and say, hey, in a 2-year trajectory, someone had trouble. Yeah. I mean, it happens, right? It's just, I think we have to account for it and protect appropriately. So.
Well, before we run out of time, let's do one question that gets to the heart of what's driving you today. So, yeah. You know, now that you're where you are, if you wake up and look at your calendar on a given day, what would that calendar look like if you're going to be excited for that day? What is it that really gets you excited today?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think we were chatting just before we started this formal conversation, Bill. And, you know, the one thing I'd say that gets me excited is working with teams that are doing interesting things. You know, there's still so much to build, and I'd say that at its core, and maybe it just comes from the background in engineering, I just enjoy building new things and, you know, sort of driving that. So what gets me excited is when I'm engaging with colleagues, you know, superiors, teams that are focused on that. And that happens, I'd say, several times a day. I've been fortunate to be in a space where there's that opportunity that presents itself professionally, and that gets me energized. The, you know, doing transformations is not trivial, especially when you're dealing with large enterprises, large organizational contexts, change management. You know, a lot of other dynamics come into play, but the rewards are there for the taking, right? So it's really more thinking about it in terms of playing that longer game and saying, yeah, there's going to be those bumps along the way, but if you really look at the end result and focus on that, then it makes it easier to have the low, I call them the more tactical challenges, and deal with them as you go through that, right? So.
Well, thanks for your insights today. I know you you had a little bit of a travel sneak up on you and you squeezed this in prior to the airport. So I appreciate that. And I'm sure the listeners will appreciate it. So thanks so much for sharing your thoughts. And it's been great to have you today.
Thanks, Bill. And enjoyed catching up again and look forward to doing this in the future as well. Have a good day.